This is Crucial Tech, a podcast about technology that affects all of us in a format that allows you to consume it in the time it takes to go to and from the grocery store. I'm your host, Lou Covey, and I probably know more about it than you do. And if I don't, I know someone who does. But first, this episode of Crucial Tech by Cyber Protection Magazine. Did you know that most people consume their news through social media? In other words, they're looking through Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever it is, and they're getting news fed to them from various publications. But most of the people that get their news that way don't trust the medium. Whereas this minority of people, about 6%, get most of their news from print media. And that's the one that most people trust. That's what Cyber Protection Magazine is about, and that's why we are one of the fastest growing publications in cybersecurity. So if you're thinking about how you're advertising and you're putting your money into social media and thinking maybe it's time to change, check out Cyber Protection Magazine. We are also in print. Welcome back to Crucial Tech, our next to last episode for the year. We will be wrapping up our last episode with some predictions for the coming year. But today, I had promised you an interview with the folks at the Mozilla Foundation's Privacy Not Included group. And unfortunately, they didn't get back to me. They were just too busy, I guess, to talk to me. But I went up on their website and I took a look, and I thought I could summarize what we should be concerned about. Now, the Privacy Not Included list takes a look at all of these products that we are buying, these digital products, and takes a look into how private they are. And in some cases, the privacy is something you can set if you know enough about it, but they don't come with privacy settings locked in. There are companies that do. And I'm just going to summarize right now. Anything from Facebook is probably suspect. Anything from Amazon is probably suspect. That doesn't mean that you can't set your privacy better, but it's a little bit more difficult with those products. I have to admit that I use Amazon products for, I use their smart assistants for Alexa, and I have got the privacy settings set pretty high, but I'm thinking actually of getting rid of those simply because Amazon is cutting back on its manpower in the Alexa division because they've lost $10 billion on that and they're not making any money. So that means the potential for breaches in those systems is going to get higher and higher. And so I'm thinking about moving to the Apple HomePod and working through Siri. But on the things that you should be looking at that are positive, if you're thinking about buying a smartwatch, Garmin is a good choice. If you're thinking about doing those web-enabled doorbells, the company you should look at is Netatmo Nest from Google. Congratulations, Google. You were on the list last year for lousy. And Eufy, E-U-F-Y is how it's spelled. As I said, smart assistants, the Apple HomePods for gaming. Xbox actually made it this year. They've got some good privacy controls already set in. The best one they rated was Steam Deck. So I'm going to be looking into that. And as far as speakers go, Sonos is a good choice because Sonos doesn't have any microphones in it. And finally, for wireless headphones, Microsoft tops the list. So that's what we're going to give you today related to the Mozilla Foundation's Privacy Not Included list. But as I was getting ready to do this, I also had an interview this week with Bruno Finelli from a company called ClearSail. This is an interesting company. They are dealing with the issue of account takeover fraud, where somebody comes in and accesses your bank account and makes purchases with it. And it just so happened that the morning I was doing that interview, I got a notification from my credit union that somebody had tried to reserve an Airbnb in Australia. So I went on the credit union website and took a look at my account history. And sure enough, over the past 48 hours, somebody had been using my wife's debit card to purchase all kinds of stuff. Not only was it in that Airbnb in Australia, it was also at a fast food place in New York City and at a car rental place in on the East Coast, and a few other things too. And so, you know, I went through the process of contacting my bank, blocking the card, getting a new card set up for my wife. But it was a kind of a pain in the ass. No, that there were things I had to get done that I couldn't get done because I had to deal with this. And so I get this call on the call with Bruno, and we have this discussion. And I explained to him what the background was. And let's go to that interview. Uh-huh. And one was to a fast food place in New York City, and the other was to a FanDuel account. And I don't gamble. So all of this was really interesting, and you guys are going to talk to me about how this is getting to be a big deal.
Yeah. Well, you're just a victim of credit card fraud, right? So someone used your credit card to purchase something and service, a product, or whatever. Fraudsters are trying to do that every day with millions of people in the world. Right. That's a problem that every country has. We're not talking about something that's particular to a specific country. When fraudsters are using, there are a myriad of tools and strategies a fraudster can use to try and mislead a website into approving a fraudulent order. He could simply steal your credit card and use it along his all of his information and try to pretend that that's his credit card. However, right. I'm not sure if that's what happened in any of the examples you shared here, Lou. In a lot of cases, the fraudster, he's not going to only have access to your credit card, but he's going to have access to your own Airbnb account. That's what we call account takeover. He will take over your Airbnb account and try to place orders as if he was you, but obviously he isn't. So, for example, this happened with my father. My father had a specific merchant that he used to buy a lot of things in there, and he had an account in there. He wasn't a lot into choosing good passwords for an account. For some reason, someone got access to his account, changed his delivery address, but his credit card was saved in there. So that person was able to make purchases as from my father's account with my father's credit card, pretending to be my father, and pass with it. Because once a merchant receives a transaction from an account that they already had established 3-4 years ago, they tend to believe that it's good. They say, okay, but this guy here already bought 7 times in the past. I'm not going to worry he's a fraudster right now.
Well, in my particular case, though, it was my wife's debit card. Uh-huh. And she doesn't have an Airbnb account. She doesn't have a FanDuel account. Mm-hmm. she hasn't been in New York for at least a decade. So how do you think that happened?
Probably someone got access to your credit card's debit card number, right? We're talking about the first 16 digits of the credit card, plus the expiration date, plus the security code, that can already get you everywhere.
Yeah.
So likely people... somehow, there are some ways for someone to get access to that. First one, that data can be part of data breaches, you know?
Yeah.
Banks, merchants, any place that you had used your card can be exposed somehow. So a lot of data breaches involving credit cards, they are even on a POS. So you use your card on a POS, that POS has something evil installed on it that's going to store the data from your credit card. But fraudsters are even, and technology is even allowing, for example, we even have algorithms that are randomly generating credit combinations of credit card numbers, expiration dates, and security codes, and testing on different websites, just so they can see what works and what doesn't.
Well, now that's something I haven't heard of before. That is fascinating. So essentially, They're just using an algorithm to manufacture the cards based on somebody's name. So it doesn't matter what, because I kind of pride myself at teaching my wife and following basic secure practices. And this pops up every once in a while. And now you're telling me that no matter what I do, they can still have the technology to get past that.
Yes. Obviously, protecting yourself already keeps you prevented against a lot of the cases. You know, for example, my I'm not going to name the merchant, obviously, but my father's password for this account in particular was ABC123, which is one of the most common passwords out there.
Yeah, well, we change our passwords about once a month. So even that
exactly changing difficult. Passwords, choosing one that wouldn't be trivial for someone to get right, all of that is going to protect you against a lot of cases. But in the end, there are some situations that is hard for you to protect yourself from. You know, such as this example that I provided, someone just randomly generating numbers. That's very hard. Most of the websites out there today, they have some level of protection. For example, already using AVS, which is a technology that identifies if a credit card and a billing address are related. So for example, through this random simulation, you will never get your billing address, you know, that we're already talking about something impossible to simulate. So you would have to go to a very insecure website, and those are happily rare, to succeed. So in the end, trying to prevent yourself from sharing your data with someone that you don't rely, sharing your data with suspicious websites, choosing your passwords, there is a myriad of things that you can do in order to protect your data so you're not exposed like a lot of people are, like my father was in this example.
Yeah. And you know, I think people need to understand that it may not be your fault. I mean, yes, people do things, do stupid things. But what you're telling me here is that the criminals out there are very sophisticated and they have multiple ways of getting through. And I'm taking a look at the pitch that your PR lady sent to me about things you can do about implementing security measures, supporting your IT infrastructure, calling for unique and strong passwords, requiring a username that is not an email address. Yeah, that's a good one. Two-factor authentication. Yeah. But the one at the end here. Send customer alerts whenever there's a contact information or password change request on the account. I mean, I think you can do even more than that, because what saved me is that I get an alert from my bank every time there's a purchase on our accounts. Mm-hmm. Absolutely every time. And I do the same thing with my credit cards, so that I know within seconds if a payment that I've made is legitimate. And the thing is, that is one of the easiest things people can do. But here we are talking to you guys at ClearSail. What does ClearSail do specifically?
We specifically protect merchants, websites like Airbnb, from approving fraudulent transactions. So in this case, if we were providing a service to Airbnb, our mission would be to stop your wife's credit card from being used to place a fraudulent order.
Okay.
So imagine that the order comes through ClearSail and we have the ability to accept or decline it based on if we know that to be fraudulent or not.
Okay.
So that's our core mission.
Okay. And how many companies are you protecting right now?
We're talking about more than 6,000 companies across the globe, probably. Moss can provide you with that exact number.
Yeah, well, even if it's just around that, that's not enough, is it?
No, it's not. That's a small percentage of the market. Obviously, there are other companies out there doing good jobs in that sense. There are even companies that handle their own fraud prevention strategies, and they are successful. But in the end, it's a collaboration, you know, it might involve a third party. It involves all the practices you have in place in your website. And it can even involve, as you mentioned, Luke, the end customer, you know, so a customer that understands that his data has a lot and he should protect that as much as he can. And he's going to use good passwords. He's not going to use simple passwords. He's going to be updating them frequently. He's going to be setting up the alerts that you just mentioned. In the end, it's not something that a single company is going to resolve. No, it's something that requires the whole environment to look, understand it's something critical, and do actions to mitigate the risks.
It takes a village to protect your bank account.
Yes, it takes. So for example, even ClearSale, currently we come a lot in the checkout. And also, once someone is buying something, we come. But there are a lot of, and even we have something that we're developing in that sense. But why wait until the checkout? You know, why can't you verify a new customer signing up for your website? Why don't you verify an access, for example, which is what happens in Google? So if you have a Google account, and most people will have, you know, they know that once they use Google from a different location, so from a very far location than they usually do, they're going to get an access. They might even be prompted to approve that access or not. So just to give you an idea, I use a lot of virtual machines. A virtual machine is like an emulation of a computer because we have a server and the server is located in another place, in another right. country, basically. So whenever I'm using my Gmail inside my virtual machine, because my virtual machine is hosted in another country, I get a warning from Google. It says, you're accessing your email account. Your email account is being accessed from this country. Do you approve this access? And then I have the option to approve. And if I approve, everything is good. And if I decline, he's gonna drop all of the instances accessing my account and have me changing my email at that moment. So there are a lot of steps that you can take, not only, for example, protecting the checkout, to prevent a fraudster from getting into that point. Either making sure that he's not able to sign up. The challenge for a merchant is doing this without challenging the good orders, without okay. challenging the good guys, you know? And that's why ClearSale has this market. Because yeah. we're talking about approving as much as we can while protecting merchants from fraudulent orders.
Yeah. I've been talking to a lot of people the past couple of weeks because we're getting ready to do some articles on predictions for next year. And one of the things that keeps popping up is that actual ransomware, where they're stealing data and things like that, that's getting tougher for people to do. But the criminals are focusing more on fraud now because it's less money, but it's greater volume. Yes. So. My one question is, from your standpoint in your company, are you seeing an uptick in fraud during this Christmas season?
Not an uptick in volume, yes, but the opposite in percentages, because a lot of good people are buying during Christmas season.
Yeah.
Proportionally speaking, fraud rates will go down. But yes, definitely more fraud than we have been seeing last year. We have been seeing some particular fraud rings acting, you know. A lot of merchants have been reporting on social networks particular types of fraud that they are seeing right now. So I think it can be said in volume, we're definitely seeing an increase in attempts. Okay. Obviously, let's keep in mind that economic pressures are behind fraud as well. You know?
Yeah.
So every time we're talking about hard economic times, inflation, interest rates going high, unemployment rates going higher as well, this creates a context that generates fraudsters because it's going to generate people in need of money and people are going to resort through those means, obviously not justified, but they're going to resort through to those means so they can profit somehow.
Okay.
And in the end, fraud is a chain, you know. There are going to be people working on ransomwares. There are going to be people working on phishing websites. If you saw, no, we already saw some websites, Lou, that, you know, it's going to make you believe it's Amazon. But then there's going to be a small thing on the URL that it's going to say, okay, that's not Amazon. And you were about to put your credit card and all of your information in a fake website.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that depressing report, Bruno.
no problem.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's part of what we do is making people aware of these things. And even when you are the most secure person in the world, you can still get hit. So
you can. You definitely can. And I hope that the main message for me is that one. Even though there are companies prioritizing preventing fraud, as the more that people understand that data is something very critical and they should be concerned with sharing their data, having their data exposed, obviously everyone's life is going to get much easier.
Yeah. All right, Bruno, thank you very much. I appreciate the time you've taken. So to sum up, the best protection you got right now is to make sure you get alerts on everything that happens on your credit cards, your debit cards, your bank accounts. get it set up, because almost every financial institution allows that, from credit cards to banks. So do that. It's the best protection you've got, because you won't lose any money. They just won't have access to it until they can resolve it. So that's it for this week on Crucial Tech. Thanks for listening. This has been Lou Covey, your host. This is a Foot Washer Media production.